Welcome back to the Brady Bunch. I mean, the Hoops HD. What is it? Where are we? I don't know where we are.
Great start, Chad.
Yeah, welcome back to Hoops
HD. He doesn't even know what show it is or where he is.
I was going to go Hoops HD Report. This is our bracket rundown show, though. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by an absolutely full panel here of college basketball experts. As well as his puppet.
What? No, I am the expert.
Just quickly, I'm Chad Sherwood. Up top here, we've got Matt Sikowski and David Griggs. In the center square, we've got John Stalica. Off to the sides of him, John Titel, Joby Fortson, Rocco Miller down there in the bottom row. What we are doing for tonight, we've got a big show. We've got a lot to get to. But what we have done this evening is I had everybody, all seven of us, went ahead and submitted a whatever our personal lists are of the top 55 teams in the nation, correct? Was that it?
Yeah. 55? I think I gave you a few more. But
yeah, but I ignored anything you gave me that was over 55. We know that you can't count, but you have no hands, so.
And we know you meant Al for the center square, by the way.
Some of us just like to go above and beyond, Jack.
But everyone give me rank the top 55 teams in the nation, regardless of conference.
Yes, you said that already, Chad.
Cross country scored that. I came up with a consensus list of the of an NCAA tournament field, as it would be, bracketed it up. I added in the single bid teams at the bottom of the conference based on my own personal selection. So forget the rest of you on those. But what we're going to do in this show is reveal the results of this consensus bracket and discuss these teams as they come up on the screen. So without any further ado.
Well, with some further ado, okay. Like this isn't quite how the selection committee does it. They select the teams first and then vote them as a committee, whereas we just kind of cross-country voted. If we did it the way the committee did it, it would take about 18 hours, probably longer. And I don't know. Like, so none of us really know the results. Only Chad knows. So we're seeing this as you do. It's below us, though. You can look down there and see it, but we can't see it.
If you just went down and looked at it, you just totally cheated and you just ruined the rest of the show. So please do not do that.
Right. Yeah.
But what I am going to do is reveal, at least for the top four seed lines, the top 16 teams in, reveal them one at a time, open up a little bit of discussion about them. And then we'll go a little bit quicker once we get past those top four lines. But here you see a blank bracket. And let's start off with the number one team. This was, I believe, completely unanimous for all seven of us. Don't think it's that huge of a surprise, but there they are getting the East region, the Duke Blue Devils.
I'm a little surprised it was unanimous because I had them up there, but I thought somebody may have dropped them out after they lost so badly yesterday. But it was Zion Williamson getting hurt. They're clearly better with him than they are without him, despite being as talented as they are. But, yeah, I mean, when you look at them and you look at what they've done, it's just an amazing profile.
Well, I want to throw a couple questions in here before we go beyond Duke. And, Rocco, let me start with you here. With the first question is, there's been a lot of talk in the media today that with this injury, which is apparently not too significant, it's going to be a few days, maybe he'll miss a game or two, that Zion should just shut it down and take his number one draft pick and take the money. Do you think what's your thought on that?
I mean, I'd hate to see that. I think he's probably getting a lot of voices in his head from every direction after what happened. But as long as it's not too serious and he truly is day to day, which I think came out, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be back within a week or two. But if it is anything long term, you know, he may get some advice from a lot of different angles. So. I would hope he's not done. I mean, he obviously is good to bring extra eyeballs onto our sport, and it's good. It's good for college basketball in general to have him out there, of course.
Right, and Titel, let me ask you. Let's see this. You know, I'm not going to ask you whether or not you're going out to buy any Nikes. That would be an unfair question. But what would you do with Duke if Zion decided to shut it down? Would you dock them, and how far would you send them down?
So, like, he's done for the season and the postseason and everything?
If he says, I'm shutting it down, he says, I'm not going to play again. I don't think that's what's going to happen. Word is that he is.
That's not what's going to happen.
But let's say it did.
Writers needing something to talk about.
Hypothetically, if that were to happen, I think part of it would depend on the on-court action. If they win out without him, which I don't think they will, but if they do, then I think they'll still be a number one seed because they're winning. If they lose three games without him, and he's not coming back, then I think they get penalized for the loss and they don't get a corollary reward because he's not coming back, unlike some teams that have lost injuries, including Duke. They lost without Jones and Reddish to Syracuse. They don't get so penalized because now those guys are back and they're not going to get – and they're back. So you shouldn't penalize a team for losing in overtime to an NCAA tournament team maybe without two starters.
I think that's a great point. And Duke is number one. Joby, let me go to you because we had another ACC team that came in at number two. Don't think it's any surprise and it is your team here at with Virginia.
No, I with the loss to Carolina, Duke and Virginia got closer despite the sweep because Virginia walked into North Carolina just recently and beat the Heels pretty solidly. So, you know, there's that three group, and we'll be talking about North Carolina in the near future. Virginia this week did go into Blacksburg. And what I like what Virginia's doing is the win at Blacksburg, the win at Chapel Hill have both come in two straight Monday night games after a Saturday game. And they've come on the road. We'll see when they go to Syracuse in a few weeks if that same pattern continues. But it's kind of a nice – hey, these guys might be able to finally do a two-game weekend in the tournament because having it's probably very good preparation. And to date, Virginia is passing that. I think you losing to Duke, when Duke has, I would say, their best shooting night of the year, is no shame on that loss.
Yeah, and Matt, I pulled both those profiles up here. You just look at that Duke profile, and you see so many wins that are – you know, not only quadrant one wins, but quadrant one A wins above that little line there, away from home, true road games. Is it just like so much better than anybody else, even with the Carolina loss, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I would say, because, put this way, two of the three losses, there are significantly mitigating circumstances. As long as Zion's back, I think he will be, and I think it'd be good for his brand actually to come back and play either together. The clear number one team, number one overall team. And I think Joby's actually clear number two. And then I think there's a little bit more murkiness.
Right. And Stalika, let me bring you in here for the number three overall team. This is where we start to get a little bit of a debate, but it is a team that's number that I believe will probably end up being number one in the rankings next week after Duke's loss. But how about Gonzaga?
Well, let's not forget Gonzaga is the only team that beat the Blue Devils at a full strength back around Thanksgiving. And even Gonzaga, as we've covered before, they did have some injuries of their own that you could attribute to losses against Tennessee on a neutral floor and also at North Carolina. But those are games they would probably lose under normal circumstances anyway.
Right. And David, I got to bring you in here. I know you're a big proponent of this Gonzaga team. I got to honestly admit, I did not have Gonzaga on my one line still. I'm the only one that did not.
Oh, for God.
And I just see – all I see here is they beat Duke and a bunch of teams that are either on the bubble or out. Actually, one team that's on the bubble and a bunch of teams that are out.
Well, okay. I mean, if you're looking at a profile as if it were a scorecard, they do not score as many points. But at what point is it an indicator and not a scorecard? I mean, if somebody beats 10 top 50 teams and someone else beats 14, isn't that an indication that they're both capable of beating top 50 teams? What I see when I look at this is one of the better wins of the year, a full-strength Duke team away from home. No one has done that. No losses to anybody outside what I think will be the top two lines. No one else has done that. Virginia has, I'm sorry. But so when you look at, to me, the best wins and the least damaging losses, they're a one seed. And when you go down the list here, they've won convincingly. I mean, they've slammed everybody that they've played. I think that, yeah, the scorecard isn't there because they didn't get 27 at-bats, so they didn't get as many base hits. But they got enough to prove that they're as good as everybody else and better than a lot of other people. I think they definitely are a one seed caliber team.
Yeah, I guess, Rocco, real quick here, when you look at them, though, are we giving them one seed because of one game? Because that's kind of what I look at here.
Well, I think with cases for Gonzaga, who plays in a league where they're clearly the superior team, we've got some other examples coming later in the show. You really have to start to depend on the power rankings, and that's why they are listed on the team sheet. And you look at the Sagarin, they're number two. You look at KenPom, they're number two. You look at the Net, they're number one. The BPI, they're number one. So I don't think you can go through all these models and be in the top two or three in every model and not be worthy of a one seed. I think at some point, the proof is in the pudding by the way that they're maximizing their possessions and they're defending possessions. I think at some point that does matter, and that's why we have the net now.
And I guess I've always been more of a resume-based metrics right. person, and they're not a one seed according to the three resume-based metrics we have up there. The KPI has them as a three seed, which I don't agree with either. But let's
Kevin, to be honest, Chad, this is where I will come in. Kevin underrates teams from lower conferences because there's a strength.
Yeah, so does the committee.
That's why Kevin and I are the two that get the closest to the committee from the formulas, to be very honest.
And let's go to a team that almost all of us thought was a one seed, including myself. Sleek, I got to bring you in here. Tennessee was a one seed by everybody other than you, who would have had them at the bottom of the two line. So I want to throw you under the bus here a little bit and justify your ranking Tennessee number eight overall when we all the rest of us had them as a one.
I'll be happy to come out from under the bus, because I'll admit after they lost to Kentucky, I did have to reevaluate Tennessee. And other than a win against Gonzaga, and I think Louisville as well, there weren't too many other high volume amount of wins, but I think part of that was because they had an easier SEC schedule. So they'll probably justify a number one seed a little bit more as we get into conference play.
Pull them up, Chad.
Okay, I'll pull them up here on the right side next to Gonzaga real quick here. Dave, you want to look at this Tennessee profile? Should we flash up on the screen any second now? There it is.
Yeah.
And they beat Gonzaga, by the way.
Yeah, the Gonzaga-Louisville at Florida. I mean, he's right as far as wins against other teams that are likely to be protected seeds. They just have the one. But I just don't think –
I think Kansas is likely to be a protected seed. Oh, sorry. Okay, you talked about wins, but
– Wins,
but it,
yes.
Okay, but on the loss side, isn't it very similar to Gonzaga, except they beat Gonzaga?
Yeah, it is. Probably a little better if you're doing the scorecard thing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. My point. One of the reasons why Tennessee on the one line. But
yeah, well, Tennessee is on the one line, and it's not like it's easy to win at Kentucky. I know that they didn't play well, but I don't think that loss – it's one of those losses that it's almost harder to win that game than it is to win an Elite Eight or a Final Four game, because if you think of Kentucky as being an Elite Eight caliber team, and I'll be shocked if they don't pop up on the next line, then beating them on their floor is harder than beating them on a neutral floor in the NCAA tournament. So how much do you really knock a team for not winning?
Well, I guess when I saw this and I looked at Kentucky and Tennessee, Tytel, let me bring you in here. I'm gonna spoil a little bit here. Kentucky was number five overall. They're going to be the top of our two lines.
Oh, thanks for ruining it.
Kentucky and Tennessee, I like that Kentucky profile better. So I don't understand why Tennessee got over Kentucky in these rankings.
Oh, Chad. I think it's a coin flip for now, but the question I want to throw to you or anybody else. So Kentucky has one game remaining at Tennessee on March 2nd, and there's a good chance they'll meet again in the SEC tourney, either semis or final, depending on how it shakes out. If Kentucky wins 2 out of 3 or 3 of 3 against Tennessee this year, is there any way Kentucky is a lower seed than Tennessee in March?
Joby, you have a comment on it?
Yes. Yes, because of Gonzaga. But if they win 3 of 3, yeah, no way, John. You're exactly right. 3 of 3. 2 of 3 is different because right now and I think it's not an outrageous component, I still do have Tennessee ahead of Kentucky, and they've played one of those three games. And yes, the Gonzaga win is a very big component of it. The fact that they have jumped out in the conference overall. But yeah, Tennessee's got to finish they've got to run through the tape. And a lot, as we always say, left to be played. But you can't just focus on head to head, especially when it's only a 2-1 score. Duke in the ACC tournament, should Virginia, should Duke stay ahead? If Duke falls behind in the regular season, let's say Duke slips up at Carolina, loses at Carolina, and thus Virginia then is the number one overall seed in the ACC tournament and then beats Duke. I think even though they lost 2 of 3, Virginia at that point would have a very strong argument.
But, Joby, I'm looking at that Kentucky profile. I see 5 wins away from home against the top of Quadrant 1. And I think only Duke is the only team with that much against the top of Quadrant 1. And Duke is the number one team.
Virginia, too. Virginia as well. Just as a note.
Okay. I just think Kentucky has a one seed profile. Rusty did not agree with me exactly on that. We mentioned they were already number five overall. Matt, let me bring you back in at number six overall, though. Should be flashed up on the screen right here. Potential matchup with Tennessee in the regional final is North Carolina, coming off the strength of that win at Duke.
Yeah, I think that's where exactly I had them. I think, again, there's 1-2, a solid one, solid two. That 3-6, a little hazier, but I think it is those four teams maybe competing for the one seeds. And it's hard for me to see another team at this point, barring maybe like a Michigan winning out. I think it's those four competing for the final two spots. And I think we have it in the exact right order.
Well, I guess we're gonna get this a little bit later here, but let me just think
Chad isn't in charge. We would have had it all messed up.
Let me pull up, actually get the next two teams up here, both at the same time, because the teams they are both of those Big Ten teams, Michigan and Michigan State, coming in at number seven and number eight overall. And Rocco, let me go to you here. Are these the eight teams? Is there anybody else besides these eight that is competing for a one seed? Are all these eight even in contention still?
Yeah, I think these eight are in contention, and I think the number nine team is in contention, if you know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think it would still take a lot of help for Houston to get into the conversation, not just from Houston themselves, but get some losses from some of these teams. Otherwise, I can't see them getting in.
Well, and Tytel, one of the problems with Michigan State is they're now dealing with another injury.
It's one thing to deal with Josh Langford, who's a good player who you knew in advance that he was going to be out for the rest of the season, which sucked, but they were still doing okay without him. Does anybody think that they can contend with, like, the Michigans of the world, much less the other two seeds, when you're playing without Nick Ward as well? I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but you're missing two huge starters.
They struggled with Rutgers yesterday, they should have blown them out of the water. Being a Rutgers guy, I'll admit that. Even David, you had a comment on him.
Well, yeah, and let me add another layer to that title, and I'd like to ask you this question. I always thought that Michigan and Michigan State had a path to a number one seed because of each other. If one of them could get two and maybe even a third win against the other, and then you're talking Purdue, a likely another protected seed that we might come up. How much credit do you give Michigan if they beat Michigan State when they're not at full strength? Is it enough to jump over a Tennessee against anybody that's already up there? I don't think that it is, but I'm kind of curious to get your take on that.
I think if you're just looking at a one-game sample, the answer is only so much, but much like with my Kentucky-Tennessee question, these teams, I believe, play twice in the next 3 weeks and then very possibly again in the Big Ten tourney.
Right.
So like Joby said, if a team wins 3 out of 3, that's one thing. The other thing I want to add is if I'm Michigan, I'm happy to, like, get usurped by the Spartans. Not that I want to play Duke, but if Zion is not 100% and we're sitting out, this is traveling across the country to the West Coast to play Gonzaga in California, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's start showing the three line here. And we already talked about who was number nine overall. It's not going to be any surprise. It is that Houston team with only a single loss. There they are in the Midwest region, playing in potential games in Tulsa. But beyond them, I think that's where we have the next drop off. And Matt, let me ask you this. You know, the next team up after Houston ended up being Kansas, who has an impressive resume but hasn't been playing quite as well since Azubuike went down.
Yeah, no, they're not the same team without him. And it's weird. I actually had Marquette above Kansas on mine because the weird thing is when Marquette was playing Kansas without Azubuike, they were controlling the game. When he came in, that totally turned the tide. So it's a weird, the two teams played each other thing. But I think Kansas is more like a 3-4 seed team without him. I think they've leveled off nicely. They won tough game at TCU. And it would set me at this point if they win the Big 12 again or at least get a share. But still,
well, they always do. That's a given. I mean,
yeah. But still, like, it's a 3-4 seed quality team, not a 1 or 2.
Well, I think one of the things, Joby, we see with this Kansas is look at that remaining profile, even starting this weekend at Texas Tech. We're going to know exactly how good they are.
Yeah. Texas Tech's the one team that pops out, K-State. But, you know, the Oklahoma schools have either been drifting in the case of the Sooners or the Cowboys just aren't really that good. I don't know how valuable the road wins are there. Kansas has to – this is exactly where they should be until further notice. precisely because we know they aren't as good without Azubuike. They still have just, you know, the great wins, whether it's Tennessee, Michigan State, you know, Matt's Marquette team. The fact of the matter is all of that, you know, adds, you can't ignore it even without Azubuike. You can't. Now, you can't give them full credit. They're not a one seed. They're not even close to a one seed. But as you pointed out, there is a drop-off after number nine.
I think those games are important, Joby, because if you look at their record in true road games, they're only 2-6. And if they don't get those against a team that is drifting, and that's a nice way of putting it, in a team that just flat-out stinks, I think that getting those, getting to 4-6, 5-6 on in true road games is a lot different than being 2-9 when you're talking about protected seeds.
David, I got a little difference.
You and I have a little difference. You really focus, and that's great. It's one of the things.
I don't think
you really focus on road. I think neutral is just as important.
Yes,
I think away from home is the key component because that's what you do in the NCAA tournament. That's just it. It's a slight difference, but Kansas has some really nice neutral wins that we cannot ignore. And I'm not ignoring them,
but if they don't get either one of those, like if they drop both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State.
Yes, that is, I agree with that they need those. Yeah. But they should get them. They should get them.
Let's keep things moving here. We got a lot more teams to get to, but number 11 overall, this was actually ended up being a tie. I think I went to net for the tiebreaker this time around, but ended up being Purdue at number 11 overall. Rocco, solid pick here in the Boilermakers.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had them 12, but I'm okay with that. Same seed line, so and also going to Hartford. So yeah, I'm good with that.
And then Matt, I got to bring you and David both in on the next team up. This is the last three seed. It's your Marquette team that you already mentioned. You had them number 9 overall. David, you didn't even have them as a protected seed. You had them number 17 overall.
Yep.
So let me get, first of all, Matt, why do you think they belong up here? Then David, I'm going to ask why they don't belong up here.
I think quality of resume is – it's not quite Kansas on this line, but I think it's better than Houston and even better than Purdue of this volume of good wins. And mix some away – some neutral court, some away from home, some on their home floor. I mean
– yeah, and there's that resume. David, what did you not like about it?
Well, I mean, it's not that I didn't really like it, but in looking at it, Whiskey at home is good, and Louisville neutral is certainly good, but that was really – once you get below that, you're talking about teams at home that just aren't in the same class as I thought some of the other ones was. K-State, not exactly a road warrior. Nova, at the time, they weren't really playing that well. Buffalo, none of those teams are even on the board yet, and they beat them at home. So – I guess my question is, who did they beat that's ahead of them that I had ahead of them? And the answer is no one, I don't think.
It was only 2 weeks ago, I think, Villanova was actually unbeaten in the Big East. Yeah. But actually,
I don't remember off the top of my head. Yeah, but, Chad, I think I had them at their ceiling even at 17. I don't think I had anyone ahead of them that they've actually beaten.
Well, let's go ahead and take a look at some of these other teams that did get in the four line here. So we can look at some of the teams that you may have had ranked ahead of them. We're going to start off with LSU, team that I think would have been a little bit higher, except for what happened yesterday with the loss at home to Florida. But Rocco, yeah. LSU, is this where they belong now in the four line with that loss?
Yeah, this was a tricky one because I thought they would probably fall a little bit further. But in this section, as we go through the next set of teams, I'm sure a bunch of teams have fallen already this week. So they just had a nice gentle fall from 12 to 13 for me.
And what I found was interesting about this four line here, let's go ahead and reveal the last three teams before I get some comments. Coming at number 14 overall, the team would be a potential matchup with Tennessee was Kansas State. Number 15 overall.
Wow.
Right behind them, Texas Tech. And right behind K-State and Texas Tech, probably not a surprise the way I introduced this, yet another Big 12 team, Iowa State. So we had three Big 12 teams back-to-back-to-back on the four line. And Tytel, let me start with you, and then Joby, I want to ask you about these teams as well. But Tytel, let me start with you. Is that where the Big 12 is? Is we just got these teams that are right there and that are almost all identical profiles now?
We're heading that way. I think they're all going to beat each other up over the upcoming weeks. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out because I don't think they're all going to go undefeated for the next few weeks. My question for Joby, if you like defense, I assume Virginia Texas Tech is the game for you, right?
Oh, my gosh, that's going to be a lot.
I think all three of them win out.
Well, whoever's playing NC State – yeah, no, just kidding. but, no, this is an outstanding conference in that thick middle, you know, that really gives you those tournament seeds. And I think they help each other. It's kind of like, yeah, I mean, because Kansas State, oh, if they lose to Texas Tech, no big deal, or vice versa. I mean, it's you don't get bad losses. You get good wins when you have the depth in the conference, and we see it out of the Big 12 every year. I think LSU is appropriate on this line with them because they are actually helping, you know, or hurting the loss to Florida. Sure, it helped Florida. I think Florida might be in our field tonight for the first time, and LSU wasn't harm that much. The team who might have been harmed the most were the Houston Cougars, because that's how Houston can justify themselves up as that cutoff between 9 and 10. Houston can't catch the Michigan schools very easily with that. LSU, a lot hinges on LSU, and they're in the same situation as those Big 12 teams in a lot of cases.
Well, I'm going to bring up this Texas Tech team also. Quick focus on them. Rocco, you had them number 14 overall, almost where we had them. Sleeka, you had them all the way down at 20. So I just want to ask both of you about them and what you liked or didn't like about this team. Rocco, let me start with you.
Yeah, I've had Texas Tech around the 16 to 20 range for the last couple of weeks, and they've been on a nice little win streak. And just compared to, you know, some of the setbacks that Iowa State, Kansas State have had, I've got them just barely above them. Of course, Nevada's setback too helped Texas Tech last night. So for me, it's just a comparison of the teams around this area, and Texas Tech is showing out just a little bit above of those three specific teams for me. And then, of course, Louisville's loss knocked them down further as well.
Right. Well, I want to get Sleeka's response, and then Dave will go to you.
Well, one of the reasons I'm still waiting on Texas Tech, sure, they have some nice wins at Texas and Oklahoma, but when you compare that to teams like Florida State now, I think even Maryland, which actually got a decent win at Iowa. And then we haven't mentioned Nevada yet because they had a little bit of a slip up last night at San Diego State. So those are a few other reasons why I wouldn't be quite ready to have Texas Tech this high yet.
Yeah, David, you want to discuss them?
Basically, it was just the top of their profile just isn't, when you can put it next to any other protected seed, it just isn't there. Like, at Texas is a good win, but just about everybody else has something not just better, but a lot better.
Well, I think one of the things I look at with Texas Tech is that they've done nothing bad at all.
Yeah, and they haven't.
And you look like at that Marquette team, you got swept by St. John's and they lost Indiana. There's bad on that profile.
Yeah, bad by protected seed standards.
Right, by protected seed standards. That's not awful by any means, but compared to, some of these other teams that we've been discussing already.
Did we explain what a protected seed was? I don't think we did.
David, what's a protected seed?
It's a team that's highlighted in yellow.
So these 16 teams are called protected seeds. The idea here is that they're not going to be put at a home court disadvantage in the first round. So, for example, Yale will not be matched up with Purdue there in the 3-14 game, because I would be putting Purdue at a home court disadvantage. But Rocco, you had a comment?
Real protection is that they're not playing an at-large team in the round of 64. But anyway.
Yeah, my only comment is that's a great point, David, on Texas Tech. But if we're going to give Houston the benefit of the doubt for not having bad losses and a handful of good wins, I think we should do the same at this point for Texas Tech, because they don't really deserve too much punishment for taking care of all the business that they've had in front of them. And it's kind of like we can treat them like more of a small conference champion until they get more opportunities to do, you know, beat Kansas State, et cetera.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to the 5 line now. Now we're going to see some potential second round matchups, even the 4-5 games, as well as the next four teams up that will be on the verge of protected seeds. Tito, let me start with you. As Louisville, Nevada, Florida State, Wisconsin come up here, and I guess we got to address that Nevada team a little bit off of the surprising loss last night to San Diego State.
I was going to say, John, if you think that's a little slip up, I'd hate to think what a big slip up is. That was inexcusable. I understand that Aztecs are the defending conference champ and that they have like a great home court advantage, but I think kind of inexcusable, as was the New Mexico loss. The one I'm interested in is the Florida State game, just because they both have these like young big guys down below. You're gonna get Reed against Cavangeli and stuff. And if you like old school basketball, I like Kansas State and Wisconsin with another matchup of Dean Wade and Ethan Happ going at it for 40 minutes.
I think you have a fascinating head coaching matchup there in the South, though, between Eric Musselman and Chris Beard in that Texas Tech Nevada game too. Matt, the Nevada team, though, you would not have had them on the five line, nor would I. So I was kind of with you on this. You've had them even lower after what happened last night.
Yeah, because they haven't won a quad one game yet. And now you have multiple losses. And I feel like, especially like their resume, when you have nothing on top, each loss is a real paralyzed loss. Like, even if it's like, I had them ahead of Buffalo, but you can argue, hey, Buffalo's got a couple of quad one wins. And now they have a couple of losses, too. But even Buffalo, I think, has done more than Nevada. And Nevada's a little stronger in the metrics now, but the five line's still, even for me, a little too high.
Yeah, you've got two wins against teams that we may be mentioning tonight in or out. They're definitely right there in the bubble. Utah State at home, Arizona State neutral. But that's it, David. It's yeah. An under-the-radar type of
It really is. I've been saying this about Nevada all year. I never thought that they were top 10 good. I think that they're easily top 25 good. And 5-6 range is about where they belong. I think we got it right. Now, another thing we forgot to mention, we're not trying to guess the selection committee. The selection committee had them as a protected seed, even without any quad one wins. And if it were debate class and I had to argue for it, I probably could. If you pull it up again, you'll see just the sheer like number of wins away from home. It's a lot. Arizona State away from home, at USC, at Fresno, at Grand Canyon. Tulsa's good at home. Utah, not good, but good at home. Loyola, okay at home. They've got a lot of wins away from home, and that's what – if you value that, then, yeah, they're a protected seed. But even with all that, like I said about Texas Tech, that's infinitely more true with this team. Their top win isn't even really solidly in the field.
I got to also note here, we're now going through five lines at another team that we have not yet seen. And Joby, why don't I bring you back in on this, is what about our defending champions, not even on the top five lines yet?
They lost this week and kind of
– to Georgetown.
Yeah. I mean, come on. You're losing to the Hoyas. But, yeah, I mean, if that game had not happened, if we're doing this show, you know, 3 or 4 days ago, they're mentioned by now. As a matter of fact, they might even be breaking that clock that the Big 12 has on the four seed. But you lose – the losses are starting to pile up. And what they were doing was – Furman's in the past, and all their preseason mistakes, it's in the past. They're a new team. Oh, they're out in front of, as John pointed out, they're out in front of the Big East undefeated, or with a two, they're right ahead of Matt's Marquette team, trying to keep pace. Oh, this is great. And then you can't afford mistakes if you have bad on your profile. And so they're going to be presumably on this line.
To
be honest. I would have him as a five, probably out of Nevada, but I can see the argument either way. It's a 5/6 profile.
Right, and there I just revealed the sixth line there, Maryland with a potential matchup with Marquette.
Maryland's the one that
Villanova, Virginia Tech, and Iowa are the other teams.
I'm starting to really like Maryland.
Well, let's talk about this Maryland team a little bit then. And Matt, let me bring you back in here, put Maryland's profile up on the screen here on the left side. But before we do that, actually. You could see here in the Maryland profile, for example, in the quadrant one, there's a line there in the middle, and some of the teams above it are in italics. Just for those of you that might be wondering what that is, the teams above that line are considered a tier 1A win. That is top 15 at home, top 25 neutral, top, I believe, 40 on the road. And below it is considered a tier 1B win. And you also have a tier 2A and a tier 2B. So we've kind of differentiated that out. But anything above the line is a really good win, basically. And below that line in tier 1 is a good win, but not a really, really good win. But Matt, what about Maryland?
No, I think getting that win at Iowa, that was a really nice win. I think that it gave him something on the profile they didn't have. Look, the tier 1A, and I think there's a big difference between, say, Iowa right here on the sixth line and then Ohio State somewhere like a 9 or a 10. And I think there is a – that's a delineation. That's what bumped me up where I probably would have them on the sixth line or so before that. Now, I think they were toward the top of my five line, and I was surprised there, especially over here. No quad one win Nevada ahead of them.
Yeah. And Rocco, you know, the other two teams in this line were Vatek and Iowa. Solidly here, I think, but do you agree with that?
I do, yeah. Okay. And I guess the only thing I would have actually, this line is exactly how I had it, so I'll leave it alone.
All right, well, then why don't we just move on to the seven line then? Salika, let me bring you back in as we reveal these teams. I think this is kind of where we've had this cutoff between the six and the seven line for the last few weeks. But you see Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Buffalo, who we mentioned briefly already, and Cincinnati, who was able to pull out the win tonight over UCF, even though they trailed most of that game. Just for a note, though, these voting was done before any games were played on Thursday. That was not included in the balloting.
This would be the second chasm that we've talked about, with the first being between Houston and Kansas here. I personally was even – I think I actually had Mississippi State ahead of Villanova for the first time, because I think the Bulldogs have quietly been consistent themselves, and Cincinnati – granted, we submitted our ballots before tonight's game, so Bearcats did survive at home against Central Florida, so it gives them a little bit of meat to stay up here. And Ole Miss, not punished too much for their loss at South Carolina earlier in the week, because it seems like South Carolina has been one of the wrecking balls that I'll probably address in my final thought later tonight.
Yeah, we may even discuss them at some point later on during the show. But Joby, real quickly, you do our J&G readings, KPI also. Has this Mississippi State team a lot higher than we've got them coming in here?
Yeah, well, and the reason why is, and while the J&G does make a differentiation between 1A and 1B, look at the number of quadrant one wins. And one thing the J&G also takes into account is beating teams in the field. Even in quadrant two, I think at least Florida is going to be in this field, and Alabama may be.
They probably should be still.
Well, likewise, the losses, except for South Carolina, which may be listed, in the 55 group. Yeah, there's nothing really awful, in the losses, and a lot of just solid good, which is about the 7 seed, 6 seed. Yeah, I mean, J&G is a 5. I think the J&G is off, because the J&G is Iowa State in the 20s. I think you should flip those two teams personally, but I can see where the metrics get you there, by just looking at a lot of those components.
Let's keep things rolling here. David, let me go over to you as we bring up the 8 line here, potential second round matches for our 1 seeds. We see Wofford there out of the SoCon coming down the 8 line along with the Johnnies, Texas, and Baylor.
So we got some interesting line here, because, when you look at these four teams, there's one that isn't like the other three, and it's all four of them. Very different profiles all across the board. I actually had, and I may have been the only one that did, I liked Wofford more than Buffalo. I think I had them both as 8 seeds, but Wofford is a really good team. And if they win 2 out of their last 3 and the real committee doesn't take them, everybody on it should be fired into the sun. Just, I mean, it's a rough close to the season. They might slip a little bit, but so far I they're unbeaten in a league that's at least as good, if not better, than the MAC. And
they have the Pac-12, and I'm not kidding when I say
that. Oh, they are. And, we don't have any Pac-12 teams in yet. So,
let me ask you that. No Pac-12 teams in yet. We just put a SoCon team in. Is the Spofford team good enough to be here, and can they now survive a loss in the conference tournament?
Any other year you say that, I think you're crazy. This is the one year where I think that actually has merit, although the Huskies, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up better than Wofford, because I wouldn't be surprised if they win out the rest of the season, although Wofford might too. It's fine. It's interesting to think that Duke would have to take Spartanburg, South Carolina native Zion, maybe if he's healthy and or on the team, to play against Spartanburg University Wofford in Columbia, South Carolina.
Well, Duke wanted number one overall and go to Columbia. That's what you get, Joby, right? Yeah. You got to play Wofford.
St. John's, in looking at the rest of the line here, St. John's all over the place. The top of their profile, the good is really good, and the bad is really head-scratching. That's even
the
more.
Good is over a six seed now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Yeah, you know.
In Baylor, I think that they're going to – I mean, I know that's where we have them now. That's probably about where they belong. By the end of the year, I bet they're better than that.
Well, they've been all over the place. And you've got to remember, Baylor had two very bad home losses to Texas Southern and SFA early in the season. But let me go over ahead and put up some first-round matchups. Let's show up the nine seeds here. That we do see Washington coming in there, Rocco, your team against Texas, along with Baylor, Syracuse, St. John's, Ohio State, and Wofford, Minnesota.
Well, I think you got the Washington-Texas matchup correct. I think you got the numbers mixed up, but that's okay. I don't see how – unless Wofford was the last eight seed, I don't see how Wofford and Washington aren't at least right next to each other. They basically have the same profile, except for Washington's got four more quadrant three wins and 100 points higher strength of schedule. But they're very, very similar besides that. Outside of that, I think Syracuse, Ohio State, Minnesota, nine line – looks perfect to me, so it looks good.
And again, this was before Minnesota got beaten up by Michigan tonight that we voted, although I don't know that that kills them too much because it was against Michigan.
I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you there.
Lenardi actually had Minnesota, just to reference another where people have Minnesota. He actually had Minnesota as dropping to the first four game. And I don't see that. What teams is – I want to pull up his profile, say, who do you have in ahead of Minnesota?
Actually, I'd rather not do that.
I'll tell you what, let's move on to the 10 line here, though. And Matt, let me start with you here. I just pulled up these 10 seeds. Florida getting Buffalo, VCU getting Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and Seton Hall on this line.
Yeah, that actually just about is what I had it here. Okay. I think I had Buffalo, somewhat here, but yeah, no, this is about what I had here because for instance, Oklahoma, man, like I really don't want that team in the field, but they look their profile solid. And like the worst you could say is they're 4-9 in the Big 12, but like that's the one glaring negative. Otherwise, they actually have some nice positives, and they probably just if they at this point, I think if they just get to 7 Big 12 wins, they'll probably be okay. It's not a high standard this year.
Well, Stalika, how about this Oklahoma team? Their profile should be loading here. I mean, not much bad, really, but there's a lot of losses, and they are five games under 500 in conference.
Well, I think as we saw last year, you can't focus as much on conference record, even in the Big 12. The committee is looking more and more at the overall profile. So their win against Florida back in Atlantis is suddenly looking better, and then their win at TCU at least gives them a little bit something away from home as far as tier one goes. The win against Dayton, sneakily looking a little bit better, but that's not something in and of itself that you can make an NCAA tournament case for, but they will get three out of their final five games at home. Texas, West Virginia, you absolutely have to win that. Kansas, and then you really need to win that one as well. And I would say either Iowa State or Kansas State. You don't have to get one of those two, but it would really help.
Right. Tytel, we did see Florida on this line also, a team that has not really been in the field recently. They're up there on the right now. You know, is that how good this LSU win was? It puts this team into that field?
It was a fantastic win, and I think that – I still don't know if they can beat Buffalo, but I think that would be a fantastic second-round matchup with an injured Spartan team. I might pick either the 7 or 10 of Buffalo, Florida to upset the Spartans in that one. It would be amazing. But Salika, in terms of Seton Hall, can we agree that anybody who's losing at home to Xavier this month is not making the 10 line?
Well, it's certainly a little bit of an occupational hazard. They have awoken a sleeping giant, but what happens on Sunday if Villanova loses to Xavier?
Well, I think more importantly, though, this Rocco, this Seton Hall profile, they beat Kentucky on a neutral court. They won at Maryland. They lost at home to Xavier's, DePaul, and St. Louis. I mean, it's so weird.
And the Kentucky win's really carrying them, and that you, of course, took a miraculous shot to win that game. Yeah, I mean, it's good enough right now to be a tournament team for sure, especially against the bubble. But there's a lot of arguments you can make against them, and they can't feel too safe if they continue to slip.
Let's move over to the 11 line here, and Joby, let me bring you back in as we bring up some more matchups here. Maryland versus NC State, Villanova, TCU, Virginia Tech, that. Arizona State, Auburn, Iowa. This is the line of 14.
We're not even down to the first four yet.
That don't belong in any field anywhere, but there they are.
I'll be honest, it looks like what I gave. I mean, you know, I mean, all of these teams have some good. The team that really, really saved their skins was NC State. NC State, they are the wildest swingy team out there, and the reason why is because that strength of schedule, we talk about it every chance we get, that out-of-conference strength of schedule is now sitting at 352.
Two.
So, it is 353,
oh, it's caught up a little bit.
It's been slowly sinking. It was 348, 49, 50. I want to know who 53 is, who they're trying to chase. But the fact of the matter, and the committee hates that, but with NC State's win, not screwing up win, I might add, in a lot of ways, against Pitt, the fact of the matter is, they're far enough inside the bubble that the committee won't punish them. That's almost the race that NC State has. Is if you get far enough inside, the committee won't go, well, it's between them and Central Florida, and Central Florida's schedule isn't crap. So we'll go with Central Florida. You know, that sort of fight. So they need to continue this. They have very little. I mean, they definitely got to win their wake at Georgia Tech. And they got to win at BC, I'd say. Just they got to sweep. They got to complete the sweep against BC that they began yesterday. So, yeah. And then a win in the conference tournament probably, you know, because they're going to be playing – you know, they'll be playing in the bye, but not the double bye. So they'll be getting, they'll be getting another BC game or something. They got to win those. They can lose to Florida State, but that's it. Their margin of error is just so close.
Rocco, on the right.
Anybody else on this line closer than Auburn? Anybody else?
Yeah, Rocco, we've beat them up all season. On the right there, I've got this Auburn profile. We know that David hates it. And it's just – it's another profile that what do you do with this, especially when you look at those predictive metrics that are so good that should be – they're this protected seed predictive metrics.
Yeah, I'm with David. I don't like it either. I'm more of a resume guy, even though I'm playing the role of defending the power rankings tonight, I guess. But that is what is so impressive for Auburn. They're managing to stay in the top 20 of the net. When they beat teams, they do it in a brutal fashion like they did last night. And that's helping them stay afloat in this new world of the net that we're living in. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to see them validate themselves by going on the road and beating somebody of note, and they haven't done that. And we'll see if they can do it at Kentucky or even at Alabama later, as the season wraps up. And then they'll get a couple opportunities at home with Tennessee and Mississippi State. But it's gonna be one of those things where we probably all agree that it belong on the 10 or 11 line, and the committee will put them on like the 8 or 7 line,
like the 6 line. Yeah, it's like, you had a comment on them? Or
yeah, I was going to look at Arizona State and NC State side by side if we're going to talk about some of the more mercurial teams right here, because as you see now, Arizona State, they have the nice win against Kansas and some halfway decent wins against Mississippi State and Washington as far as teams in the field. But Washington State and Princeton, what are you doing?
Yeah,
even the Huskies were playing with fire against Washington State, but even there's still a bit of a rivalry aspect to that, but I don't know what the Sun Devils' excuse was at home.
I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and pull up the 12 line here, which is where we're going to get to the first four. But I'm going to actually start by here. The first team that got in the 12 line, this was above the first four, was another automatic bid winner there. I put them over in the West region. That's Belmont. They actually would be inside the bubble, according to our group now. That's an automatic bid there for.
Yeah, and if you put them side by side next to Auburn, you'll see that their wins are probably a little bit.
And they were right next to Auburn in the balloting. But David, the South region now is the first. Is two of our first four teams should be popping up on the screen right now. Central Florida and Furman, and I actually did it backwards. Those were our last two first four teams. I pulled up the wrong one here. I'll pull up the other one also.
Okay, well, Furman in.
We'll get the other two up here also. Temple, Alabama, Central Florida, Furman. There's our first four. Go ahead.
Yeah, which is interesting that Furman got in. I think I had them 50th, so that would have been just out. They did have the win at Villanova, and I'll say this. I think that they're playing better now than they were early in the season when they won that game and got into the top 25. I don't know if the real committee is going to take them if without the automatic bid, but I find it interesting that our cross-country balloting voted him that high. When I had him at 50, I didn't think anybody else would have him up there at all.
Well, let me put you in on this, because you've never been a big fan of some of these under the radar schools. You had them rated highest of any of us.
Yeah, I think the way with Novit, I like that how their metrics improved throughout the year, to where they're still not maybe quite inside the bubble metrics wise, but close enough to where like you back that up with some wins. So like, hey, you've proven you can beat some. That's why I liked them over like a Central Florida, who I'm not sure who Central Florida's beat in this field, or that, or even Auburn. Like, now Auburn, I'll admit, was an oversight. I would have had Auburn right on that 10-11 line too, but that was a pure oversight. Central Florida, that's who have you beat in the field, and your metrics aren't so good that I'll maybe look past the fact you've beaten no one.
Central Florida dominated this line, Matt. They dominated this line.
This line. Yeah. Yeah. This line.
Alabama and Temple is the answer to your question.
Alabama, Tytel, Alabama, I mean, lost three in a row and they were on the bubble to begin with. This is the one team I do not agree with the rest of with our consensus here. I would not have had this team in, but what is your thoughts on them?
My thoughts are that two or three losses, albeit by a combined 4 points, is pretty terrible.
Right.
Much like Rocco pointed out with Seton Hall, though, this team has beaten Kentucky once by this much and is staking its entire resume on one win.
And I think that unfortunately that's what we've seen at the bottom here is we saw the same thing with Arizona State with the Kansas win. I'm going to show the last team here on the 12 line, and this actually would have been the top. This team received the most votes out of anybody that did not make the field, and that was Lipscomb. So they would have been right below our first four, despite their loss to Florida Gulf Coast last night.
Yep,
they were liked by the committee a lot. But let's talk before we go to the rest of the 13 through 16 line. I'm going to reveal some of the top teams that missed out in the field that did get votes here. They're going to come down the top two teams out in order. David, let me bring you in here. Clemson, Utah State, Butler, and the Georgetown Hoyas. Tytel is in pain.
Well, I'm glad none of those teams are in.
If you want to complain about UCF and Furman and Temple and Alabama, though, Rocco, you got to look. This is the next four teams up. Right?
Yeah, pretty close. It's not pretty, I agree. I agree that these teams are all out, right. But I disagree that, you know, we should laugh at Georgetown. I do think they're playing a much better brand of basketball than those eight teams, or these four plus the four you mentioned, are right now. And they would be an entertaining team to watch in the tournament. I mean, they've got Jesse Govan, Max McClung. I mean, and they're getting better over time, but not deserving at this point.
Well, I got to let Tytel respond to Georgetown because he was slamming his head into his computer a moment ago.
I mean, I want to laugh, but according to Rocco, I'm not allowed to, so I'll restrain myself. This team has one top 50 win, albeit a great win over Villanova. The way it works out, they could win four in a row, lose at Marquette, which I'm sure Matt knows they're going to do in the season finale, regular season finale. I don't think they'll be a top seed, so I think that they'll get another Big East team to beat up on in the Big East quarters and lose to Marquette or the revenge game against Villanova in the semis. This could be a 20-win team. I don't deny that. I'm just saying that these Big East losses, albeit on the road, are not going to be so impressive, and the Villanova win – I'd rather stake my claim with Alabama's Kentucky win than a Villanova win.
I want to show a few more teams that receive votes here. There's seven more teams that receive some type of voting, at least in the top 55, not necessarily into the field. They include Liberty, South Carolina, UNC Greensboro, Nebraska, San Francisco, Indiana, and Dayton. But Joby, the South Carolina Gamecocks, we mentioned them earlier. Is it time to discuss if Angry Frank's team is actually a candidate for an at-large bid at this point?
Their overall record's awful and needs to change. They're not Georgia circa 2000. They're not. And even with this bad bubble, they need to improve the overall record, even if their SEC record is pretty darn strong. I give them almost a pass. Stony Brook's not a bad one. The Wyoming loss, you can't give a pass to in any way, shape, or form. But they're starting to compile. Florida's now in our field. Road win. Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss is in our field. Yeah, if they continue to win, and they will get their chances against the next two games against teams in our field, though they'll probably knock one out if they beat Alabama, they'll probably knock Bama out. If they can get that overall record up there, why not? And Missouri, A&M, and Georgia are very big wins. I'd like to see them win, to be very honest, all five. But if they can win four or five, their overall record at that point will be 18-13. That is a reasonable record, especially with how bad the bubble is. That is the only thing holding them back is a 13-12 D1, 14-12 overall record.
Their only four losses in the SEC were against the top three of Tennessee, Kentucky, and LSU. They're a perfect 9-0 against everybody else, including Mississippi State, who they've already beaten.
Right, and I want to bring up this other team on the right, though, Tytel, real quick. Indiana got a little bit of consideration, not much, deservedly not much, being 4-11 in the Big Ten and 13-13 overall. But that top of the profile still is so good-looking, isn't it?
It's amazing. This team could finish with a losing record and still have three wins over protected seeds. It's ridiculous.
And that's the one reason that I just don't think you could throw this Indiana team out completely, despite the fact that they just can't win a game. And they got their chances still. They got games that'll catapult them right back in there. I just don't think they're good enough to win them. David, you had one more comment, and then we're going to pull the rest of the
team. I was just going to say, South Carolina, they're sitting at 14-12 now. Yeah. If they can get to 21 wins, and I realize that there's a lot of different combinations of how to do that, the five games remaining and up to four games in the conference tournament. If they can get to 21, what Joby said about their record is no longer in play, and I think they are in.
Record's no longer in play. You hit the 20 barrier, record's no longer in play.
Yeah, I think it's 20, though, David, not 21, because if they win out this regular season, they will be one of the top four seeds. They'll get a buy into the quarters in the SEC.
Okay, yeah.
Well, you got to remember that.
But
let's go quickly through what the rest of the field would look like. I'll see some more first-round matchups here. The 13 line, we're going to see Iowa State would be proposed to match up with Yale, Irvine against Texas Tech, Hofstra against LSU, New Mexico State against Kansas State.
Yeah, that's a fun one. And Chad, we're going through these teams kind of quickly. Where do we go if we want more information on
this? Just scroll down the website, watch our Under the Radar podcast last night. The 14 line there, Vermont against Marquette, the dangerous game for your Marquette team, Matt.
If history's a guide, it won't be Vermont. It will be another team in the 16 slot who beat Vermont.
Old Dominion against Purdue. Drake against Kansas, an interesting game. Houston, Texas State. I would note Texas State actually lost a game tonight. On the 15 line, Michigan State would be matched up with Northern Kentucky. Kentucky against Radford. Michigan, South Dakota State. North Carolina and Montana. And then finishing off the field here on the 16 line, Duke would get the winner of a game between Norfolk State and Canisius, the Golden Griffins. Prairie View and St. Francis, Pennsylvania, the other first four game. Joby, I think your Cougs are in okay shape to get past the first round this year.
I'm looking at Bucknell. Look, give us Bucknell.
Bucknell and Sam Houston State also on that line there, yep. Yeah. But on that note, what I want to do is I want to leave this up here on the screen, but run through each of you for number one, any other final thoughts in the evening or any other comments about the bracket or any other teams that were in or out, but just any other thoughts at all.
Survival board, Chad.
Oh, and we'll get to that at the end of the final thoughts. How's that, Dave?
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right.
Because I want to leave this up for final thoughts and any comments about it. But, Matt, let me start with you.
The one team I'm really hoping, not in the field, probably rightfully so, but I really want to see that Utah State team find its way in. I think they are legitimately that good. And if you get the chance, March 2nd, Nevada, at home, you beat them, I think they're probably in this field.
Yeah, I'll pull up that Utah State profile real quickly here on the left-hand side. Nothing good, but again, a nice quantity of wins already with 21 of them.
And that too is much like I might dog Nevada. They still most likely will be wearing white in the first round. It will be a top 30 team in the net. So that's a quad one win they could use. You get that, you don't stub, maybe you only lose one other game in that. Well, it would be the conference tournament if you do the at large. But like, you win your other games, you beat Nevada, you don't do anything dumb in the conference tournament early on. I hope they're in this field. I think they actually are a quality team, and there are not quality teams right now at the back of this line.
Joby, how about you?
You know, You know, I love the domino theory. I've talked about a lot that one team hinges. I referenced LSU and Houston. I do that quite a bit. We saw a domino fall yesterday with Lipscomb losing. Clemson might be in our field had Lipscomb won. TCU might be higher than what they are seeded because both Lipscomb has a win over TCU and Clemson's, besides a win over Virginia Tech, Lipscomb was their other win against the field at the present time, and that makes them bereft. And with the bubble being so bad, maybe you pull Clemson at that point. And then is Lipscomb even the team we should be listing because Liberty's now leading the conference? And Lipscomb itself is no longer, as we pointed out, is the first team out. Another loss of any sort, including Liberty, they're definitely not at large worthy. I think Tytel would say it. So these dominoes, and the SoCon needs to watch it, you know, and even the American, to a degree with Houston, needs to watch it. They do have effects on the bubble. Look at them. It's not just the team you're focused on. Oh, Lipscomb's now outside the at-large field. It's the echo effect that hits other teams that are fighting for bids. If you are a Clemson Tiger fan, you are also a Lipscomb fan, period.
All right. Stalika.
I teased South Carolina as a one wrecking ball earlier, and I'm glad Chad and Tytel don't have the graphic that we can highlight that, but we also have teams like Illinois, Xavier, and even Washington State that have suddenly gotten hot at the right time. So these are teams that they're going to show up as bad losses on the resume, but what do you do with teams that are suddenly beating multiple teams within the bubble within the span of 2 to 3 weeks right here?
There is definitely room for teams to jump in there. But Tytel, let me head over to you.
So I'm intrigued by, not to steal Matt's thunder, but the Marquette run here in terms of a couple things. Number one, they could face an injured Michigan State team followed by an injured Duke team. Number two, they would be doing it a few subway stops away from me in Washington, D.C., where they've already won a game this year.
Yeah. They play without Marcus Howard.
Excellent. Rocco.
Well, speaking of dominoes, as Joby was alluding to, a really interesting one came up for me when doing some background work today was for a team that lost last night that actually got a ton of help, and that would be the Butler Bulldogs, a team that lost a game to Marquette last night but actually got a ton of help over the last 2 days. Their best win of the year is neutral against Florida. That looks way better today. They got a road win at Georgetown. That's suddenly a quadrant one win. They've got results against St. John's and Ole Miss that have steadily improved over time. And the road win at Xavier is now a quad two instead of a quad three. So you start looking categorically, Butler today looks a lot better than they did yesterday despite losing. And my last spot was between them and Furman. For this purpose, and if I was actually on the committee, I would vote for Furman. But based on historicals, because Furman's a 300-plus strength of schedule, my actual bracket projection will have Butler due to the reasons listed.
And I really appreciate that because I'll tell you that Butler was one of the teams that just mystified me when that they got so many votes, and I just didn't even think they were in the top 55. But mentioning the fact that those wins they have look a lot better, that's a real good point about them. What I got to do, David, before I go to you for a final thought, you mentioned you wanted to we should bring it up here. So let's do this right now before I let you end the show. I'm going to pull up our Hoops HD NCAA Tournament Survival Board, right? That's right up here on the screen for us, correct?
Yeah, it should be. It's up there. It's up top. No, those are profiles, Chad. Oh, there it is. Okay, and this is just a wonderful tool. It's it shows the committee what they're supposed to be doing. That's why we do it, to help them out. And again, there's 349 teams on it. These are all teams that could still win the conference tournament and, in theory, win the championship. We do categorize them. No one's bowled in all caps yet. No one's gotten an automatic bid. There have been some teams that are locks. So if you see a team that's bolded, it means they're in the tournament no matter what happens the rest of the way.
Like Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia Duke, there.
We got those. But
we have an update as of tonight. Let's do a real quick update right now. It should be changing right there. And it's suddenly gone down a number.
What happened?
And this happens out on the Horizon League tonight. Cleveland State has been eliminated from being able to make it into the Horizon League tournament. So we're down from 349 to 348. But all remaining 348 teams left on this board here do have a chance to win the NCAA tournament this year.
All right. So that's David, our survival board.
And David, let me let you finish off the show with any other thoughts you might have.
Well, I guess the bubble is exceptionally weak, and I guess just to build it up there, I hope that they start to look for good teams that may be better than their profiles that play in the under-the-radar conferences. I know that they won't, but at least look at a New Mexico State if they fail to get out of the WAC. At least look at a team like Old Dominion if they win, especially if they win out against, like, the top pod in Conference USA and not win the Conference USA tournament. Lipscomb deserves a look. Belmont deserves a look if they don't win their tournament. I think I'd rather see that than some below 500 team in a weak conference, especially, or in a power conference, especially this year.
I agree with you, but I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. I'm Chad Sherwood. We had with us here Matt Zukowski, John Tytel, John Slica, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, David Griggs, Joby Fortson. You can check out the final bracket again down below if you want to look at it more. And we will be back again, talking to you again real soon.